It's time to talk about Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. And now, here's Ira.
What do you get when you put a small group of men together in 1993 who wanted to sing? Well, you get the Las Vegas Men's Chorus. Now it's 32 years later, and it's 100 voices, and they join together for a tribute to musical theater composers who left an indelible impact on theatergoers, Tony Award voters, and the world. And my guest is Ryan Duff. He's artistic director of that group. There he's waving for those of you watching and listening. And he is our artistic director of that group, the Las Vegas Men's Chorus, which will be performing Broadway Our Way at UNLV's Artemis W. Ham Concert Hall. And that's June 29th at 4 p.m. And for ticket information, go to unlv.edu/PAC. That's unlv.edu/PAC. And for everything about the chorus, go to lvmenschorus.org, lvmenschorus.org. And you follow them on Facebook, Instagram, X, and YouTube. And Ryan, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me, Ira. I'm thrilled to be here.
For those who are listening, not watching, I will say that you look like a young Telly Savalas. That's an old reference, but what the hell? I'm going to throw it out there anyway.
Toe Jack. Yes, the bald head.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So before we get into the chorus and the intro, I mentioned the formation of it so many years ago. How did you get involved and when did you come to Las Vegas? And you have an amazing background in terms of music yourself. So tell us a little bit about yourself for those who may not know or be aware of Ryan Duff.
Okay, sure. Well, I moved to Vegas in 2004 after a long career as a singer on cruise ships. I did some contracts with Holland America and moved here as a singer and an actor on the Strip. And in 2008, when there was the big boom of growth here in Las Vegas, I decided that I probably should at some point in my life pursue that degree that I got in choral music education. And so there was a big boom of schools being built, and there was a call for a lot of teachers. So I took the plunge and became a high school choir teacher with the Clark County School District. And I just finished my 17th year yesterday, actually. And now I teach high school music to youngsters, 9 through 12. And I also am wrapping up my 12th year as the director of the Las Vegas Men's Chorus.
Good. And well, I want to point out for many people that don't know that listen and watch from outside of Las Vegas, this event that we're talking about, you can certainly go to it when you come to Vegas as a visitor. And including your background, just you touched on you coming to Vegas and getting involved in the entertainment scene. You were in Tony and Tina's Wedding at the Rio.
Yep. I did Tony and Tina's Wedding at the Rio. I was a gondolier at the Venetian for a while. I started in the Can-Can Cabaret at the Paris. I was kind of all over the place.
And when you were the gondolier, did you ever fall out of the boat?
I did not ever fall out of the boat. Not with passengers, at least. Okay. When there were no passengers, we kind of had some fun. But I never crashed a boat with any guests in the boat. So
just out of curiosity, and this has nothing to do with our conversation, but when you become a gondolier, because there is water, do you get safety instructions or training?
We do. We get trained on all the things. And you're doing all these things while also singing, you know, beautiful Italian arias. So I'm not sure which is more important, but we were trained in both. So,
oh, very good. Okay. So now when did you get involved with the Las Vegas Men's Chorus? Because as I mentioned, it started in 1993. So that was before you got to town.
Sure.
How did you get involved with that organization?
There was a call for, they were looking for a new director, and I had some.
You look like Coach Jack, right?
Yeah, the specificity was you must look like Kojak. Actually, I had hair then, but the stress of the job, I've lost it since, you know. So no, there was a call for someone with some entertainment experience as well as MD experience, and I went to the interview and I led a rehearsal, and they called me within 30 minutes of walking out the door. So
that's pretty quick.
Yes, it was a quick turnaround. I think they knew who they wanted as soon as I left.
Oh, that's excellent. So in terms of yearly performances and the chorus, as I understand it, performs not just once a year, it's several times and gets involved in the community as well as these bigger productions, as the one we're going to talk about in a moment. But when you started that part of it, when did you start with the productions itself within the chorus?
I did. When I first started, we were doing two main stage concerts a year, usually like a holiday and then something sort of fun in the spring, like May, June time period. As we continued to grow and get larger, we moved to a three cycle season, which we're in now. We actually outgrew other performance venues in town. And now that's why we're at Ham Hall, our new home. We love it. And UNLV takes excellent care of us. And it's a beautiful space for us to be in. So we do those three main stage concerts, as well as upwards of 10 to 20 outreach concerts and outreach opportunities in the community. A year we've done, by the end of this run in June, we will have done 10 outreach concerts in 12 weeks.
We should point out that the facility that you're going to be performing in is, of course, air conditioned, given the fact that it's summer.
Yes.
And it gets
a nice break
in Las Vegas. Yeah,
yes.
Exactly right. Well, before we get into the actual discussion of what the programming is, because I alluded to it, obviously, in the beginning with Broadway. But all right, you've got 100 men singing. Just from the point of view of logistics, how do you organize that?
Well, it's a little bit like herding goldfish.
Yeah, I would think so. Well, you got the experience with water with the gondolier.
That helps.
Fine.
And all my time on Kojak helped too.
Yeah, and the cruise ships where there's water also. So yeah,
that's right.
Ties in. Yeah.
You know, it's to be effective in my position, you have to have, first of all, I have a very supportive board who take excellent care of me and kind of handle a lot of those logistical details. Our president, Ryan Miller, who is an excellent producer role, does a lot of the, you know, the fine tuning and the details of like mic placement and things like that. But it really is, you have to have the artistic brain and you also have to have the logistical brain of how to get them all on and off and how to transition it nicely. And again, the staff at UNLV is so incredibly helpful and they work really well with us. We do a full day of tech before our shows on Sundays. And so there's just a lot that goes into the unveiling of a production, just like the experience I've had as a performer myself and all the production things I've done in my life have really helped give me a better understanding of how it works behind the scenes so that the patrons and the paying customers really just see a beautiful, beautiful show that allows them to have a little bit of an escape.
Do you do some degree of subdivision? What I mean by that is because there's 100 people involved, do you work with a group of, say, 20 at a time and then eventually put them all together to make the 100?
No, we rehearse. We rehearse every Sunday and it's a full company rehearsal. I have all 100 of them in a room rehearsing at the same time. We do have a small conglomerate of them that are in the dance line that are part of our dancers. They do a separate rehearsal. And then I have about 25 to 30 in a, what we'll call a featured vocal ensemble that perform in a smaller group as well. And those kind of work to give breaks to the main ensemble. It gives a different look to our patrons so that we're not all looking at all 100 at the same time. They're kind of seeing different factions of our ensemble in smaller groups as well as the large ensemble. It really breaks up the show and it gives everybody a little a chance to see and hear different things.
I'm assuming that they're not a cappella, so there has to be music involved, correct?
We have done a cappella. We do explore a cappella occasionally, but we do have a full band that backs us up. We have a full-time collaborative pianist. Jonathan is his name. He's fabulous. He plays with us at rehearsals and in the pit. And then I have a drummer, a bass player, and an auxiliary keyboardist that help to back us up. So it really is like almost like being at a rock concert in a lot of ways.
Yeah, exactly. Except it's a Broadway tribute in this case, which we'll talk about in a moment.
Right, right.
Yeah. But you mentioned rehearsals on a weekly basis. Clearly, they're not at Artemis Ham Hall. Do you find a room big enough for 100 guys?
Yes, sir. We actually rehearse at a ballroom studio on the west side of town, Arthur Murray Ballroom Dance Studio. We bring in our chairs and they're gracious enough to give us the space on a Sunday afternoon.
Oh, okay.
And it accommodates all the things that we need for rehearsal space.
Right. So do you find that because it's grown, and I alluded to that in the opening, because it's grown to 100 men from what it started out as 32 years ago, do you find that the enthusiasm increases because of the volume of people involved, if that makes sense. In other words,
absolutely. You know, I think that I've always believed, my philosophy from the podium has always believed that quality will breed further quality and quantity. You have to have a good product first. You have to have something that people want to be a part of. You have to build a culture that allows for a social outlet as well as the artistic outlet that people are a part of. All of our people, a lot of them have full-time jobs. Some are retired. So for them to give up this kind of time in addition to their own lives means that they want to be a part of something that's bigger than themselves. And I really believe that no one would do that if it wasn't great and it wasn't doing great things in the community. After COVID, we saw a surge in our membership because I feel like so many people were adamantly looking for something to be a part of again. They wanted that social part. And so we really lean into that and really create a very familial space, a very safe space for everyone to kind of explore themselves socially, as well as be a part of something that brings us all together, which is, of course, the singing and the music.
Well, I want to quote someone you may know well, Ryan Duff, who said,
"Oh, I know that guy."
Yeah. When you are part of something special, you are special. And that ties in with what you were just saying. Because they're volunteers, how do you balance the need to be, from your perspective, a professional and make sure the product is professional? And at the same time, take into account that these are people who are not necessarily all, some maybe, but not all are. A lot of them are volunteers, amateurs, etc. So what's the process you go through to exact discipline within the performance, and yet at the same time, you don't want to alienate anybody?
Sure. I think that's a great question. You know, we do have lots of our performers who have come from very illustrious professional careers, and we have people who are singing for the very first time, or folks that haven't sung since high school, which was 30, 35 years ago. So I think it's all about a balance of repertoire and a balance of programming that allows for those that you kind of have to meet in the middle. There's people who really are hungry for really difficult literature and really difficult, hungry, hard sight reading things that are challenging their ears and their musicianship. And then we've got folks who really need to be next to those people because they just need to hear it. They can't read a music. They wouldn't even know how to hold the music upside down. And so it's a delicate balance in terms of placing the right bodies with the right people in terms of a buddy system. Just really leaning into, there's a brotherhood and a companionship here that allows you to not only grow musically, but grow as a person and grow into your authentic self in a safe space where you can express yourself.
So do you find occasionally, if, for example, you're pairing someone who's a pro with someone who's not necessarily a pro and they're struggling, do you not necessarily address it in front of the whole group, but do you take them aside later and you not mentor them per se, but suggest things as to how to reach that same level as the person they were partnered with?
Absolutely. We have a really strong, again, we have a strong board in place to help with all those things. We have a buddy system that allows for all of our new members to have sort of be paired with a veteran member for things like, where do I find my music? What time is rehearsal this week? What are we wearing to that performance? Mm-hmm. Those kind of outreach questions as we get larger, some of those minutiae details can get lost in the shuffle, right?
Sure.
And so I really feel like we have just a lot of really great systems and procedures in place to make sure that no one is floundering. And of course, my experience as a public school teacher, you never blanket your discipline. You never blanket your criticism. You always pull aside and we try to make it a very constructive, positive spin. This isn't working, but how can we help you make it work? And I think we've gotten better at it. It's not perfect, but I think our growth is a testament to the fact that we are doing a lot right. And I'm really happy, really, really happy and proud to be a part of it.
Now, what do you do for example, in pictures I've seen of the chorus, they're dressed alike or a similar attire, let's put it that way. So how do you not enforce it, but how do you make sure that everyone's dressed the same so that it has that unified look?
Sure. We have a membership handbook that they look at, a contract that they're a part of when they become a new member, and all those things are in it.
Okay.
You can provide your own tuxedo, or we have systems in place to help you. We've gotten lots of things donated to us. We have lots of things in storage. There will never be a financial burden for any member. who can't afford to put themselves out there like that. We have systems in place to help everyone, but a lot of people use it as an opportunity to, you know, oh, I want some new duds. I'll buy a nice new tux. It's nice.
So, for those who can. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so it's interesting. What you're doing is you want to have a professional look and an elegant look. I'll use that term. And at the same time, you recognize not everybody can afford a tuxedo or even maybe to rent a tuxedo. So there are things in place that allow everyone to have that look.
Absolutely no barriers whatsoever. If people want to be a part of us and they want to sing, we find a way for them to do that.
And I get the feeling that with your group performing after one of these main performances, such as the one coming up on June 29th at 4 p.m. called Broadway Our Way at UNLV Artemis W. Ham Hall. And I never trip over W. I used to, but I just think of a W. But anyway, that's a minutiae thing. But the fact that when they perform at what I just mentioned coming up, that there is a there's a high that happens afterwards.
Totally.
Yes. And that doesn't necessarily go away immediately. That's going to last a little bit.
You know, I think that's a testament to our retention numbers. We keep growing because we're gaining new folks, but we're also retaining people who are a part of us and they want to stay a part of it. Because again, there's that performer high you're talking about, that euphoria. When you're a part of something special, it makes you special. And when you feel that sort of ovation and that warmth from an audience, you can't put a price on that. You can't really bottle it up and sell it either. It is something you have to really experience as a performer. And I think that our organization does a fabulous job of making people who in their daily lives feel very ordinary. I think on stage, they walk off feeling extraordinary and they feel like superstars.
Yeah. And they're looking for the next endorphin hit.
Totally.
The next performance. I would imagine because of the size of Ham Hall and the size of the chorus that, and I may be wrong, so correct me if I am, that maybe a third of the audience, or up to a half perhaps, is relatives or friends of the chorus, and the other half is the general public who's interested in seeing a good performance.
But a little bit of both. Yeah, we have, as we get larger, it does kind of increase our client base for families and friends, but again, as we continue to get ourselves out there with opportunities like this, for example, and just lots of ways that we're reaching more people, I think people are looking to find out what we're all about. And I think there's so many people that I've come in contact with over my 12-year tenure who are like, I didn't even know Las Vegas had a men's chorus. I didn't even know that you existed. So we had a little bit of an identity crisis for a long time when I first started. As you try to build something, if people don't know who you are, they're not going to come. But as we continue to build a reputation for putting on really, really quality, family-friendly entertainment at an hour that's not, you know, 9 p.m., it's not in a casino, I think we're offering something different that I think people can really bite into. I would venture to say there's no one in town doing what we do. And I think that makes us special in a very entertainment-saturated city. I think you have to find your niche. And I think that we really have. And the more people that know about us, our client base is just going to continue to grow.
So what you're saying, I'm going to spread the rumor that Ryan has speculated that within 5 years, the chorus will be performing at Allegiant Stadium. What do you think about
that? Oh, my goodness. Let's call him right now. Let's make it happen. I think we would need a longer sound check than some singers get in that space.
But yeah, I would think so. Yeah. So tell us, I alluded to it in the opening, what the Broadway Our Way is about in terms of the tribute. Give us a sense of the show itself. In a you don't have to go, you know, song by song. It's really more what you see it as, because you're the artistic director. So how do you see this program? It's for obviously, and that's why I wanted to have you on too, because people who listen and watch from outside Las Vegas who are going to be coming in, if they're Broadway fans, then this is another way to enjoy it other than the usual entertainment that you see up and down the strip or downtown.
I love the question. Thank you. Yeah, Broadway Our Way is just that. We are doing some tunes that are expected. You'll see some Sound of Music. You'll hear Phantom of the Opera. You'll hear some things. And then I think we've got some things that are a little less expected. I tend to throw some gems in there that maybe people don't even know. The show's kind of divided up into some vignettes. There's a whole section on lessons that we learned from Broadway. So things about songs about maybe stepping out of your comfort zone, accepting yourself, loving thy neighbor, et cetera, taking that leap of faith. Will there be some wicked? Perhaps.
Maybe.
There's a whole segment in the show on shows that were celebrated dance, like West Side Story, Sweet mm-hmm. Charity, Moulin Rouge. There's a whole section of the show about how Broadway is for everyone. And it celebrates inclusivity and celebrates how every Broadway show I've ever gone to teaches a lesson about loving each other. And there's a space for everyone. And so we're doing something from La Cage aux Folles. We're doing something from You Can't Stop the Beat from Hairspray. Shows that really embraced diversity and really embraced ways that people feel othered can still feel like they're a part of something great.
When you decide on the program and you're looking at songs from Broadway and communicating different aspects of what you want to communicate, how far back do you go? Because you mentioned West Side Story, which is from the 60s, which is pretty good. But do you go even further back in the sense of maybe something from Cole Porter, maybe Gypsy, maybe Annie Get Your Guy? I don't know.
We've got some.
I'm not the artistic director, so you can never tell me.
Well, we've got some stuff from the 50s. We've got some Gershwin.
Very good.
Yeah, I think what we do really well is when people come to our shows, there's always something for everyone. And
I was thinking even, Ryan, from a demographic point of view, that if you use something from a musical that was from you mentioned the 50s, even the 40s or the 30s, that you would also attract a crowd that's older rather than younger too. So the whole show doesn't have to be that, but if you have one or two tunes that they recognize particularly.
Yep. And we have a very large demographic in our audience base. And so again, I try to program something for everyone. It's a buffet, and maybe not every bite will be for you, but I guarantee you, you'll leave fulfilled and there will be a bite for you from in some capacity.
Right. And you can't go wrong with a Great American Songbook. So regardless right. of what decade, although that's limited when we think of it as a certain period of time, but yeah, you definitely can do that. What was the most challenging song and perhaps with a dancer's performance that you are staging for the upcoming?
Oh gosh, you touch on that. We do have a full functioning dance line who performs with us. I would say those require the most sort of collaboration. Our staff choreographer and I work very closely together. He's actually my husband, and so that helps. And we work really well together in terms of planning and making sure that all the logistics work out to be minus those 10 singers. How are they going to be blocked? How are the singers going to work? Are they going to do some choreography to balance that? I'd say those numbers require the most sort of artistic endeavor in terms of brain and building the show and building what we're looking at. So
do you ever take your professional disagreements home with you?
I'm sure we do. I can't think of the last time that happened, but I'm sure that we do.
Yeah. And also you mentioned the other Ryan. So there's two Ryans in this organization, which gets very confusing.
It does.
Yeah. But the fact that you mentioned earlier that Ryan handles a lot of the technical stuff, which frees you up to concentrate on the artistic aspect of it. That's a good partnership in that sense. So it works out. I asked you what the hardest one was. What's the easiest song or performance that you've picked for the dancers or for the singers?
I would say we had things that come together quickly are the numbers that the most people know. Often we're doing really complex arrangements that have lots of divisi and lots of harmony. The ones that are most successful, the quickest, are the ones that don't have as many words, because we do our entire show memorized. So we're talking about 15 to 20 tunes.
Oh, and they're not looking at paper. They are
not using their music on stage. So the ones that come together the fastest are the ones that have very straightforward harmonic structure. Right. And are not as wordy.
I gotcha. Something we talked about earlier, and it's a difficult question, but I was thinking about it. Do you ever, unfortunately, have someone that you would like to participate, but again, from your professional point of view, they just can't cut the mustard in the sense of they're, no matter what you do and you work with them individually, they're just not at a level that helps the overall chorus. Does that occasionally happen?
It has. We hold three castings a year. Before each cycle, we hold an audition. Right. And the audition consists of they prepare a song and they sing something, and then we test their vocal range and I test their ear. I'm looking at maybe even changing that process to see if they can read some music and follow along with me a little bit moving forward. But nothing daunting, just we need to be able to make sure that they can handle this.
Well, you raise a good point about the auditioning process. I should have realized that too. Yeah, you may have to reject somebody, but it's at the audition process level, not at the performance level on stage.
Right.
Okay. Got it.
Yeah, they will have put in their time and they will have. We do have an attendance policy, of course, that if they have to meet the minimum requirement of seat time to learn the music. But I've never had to cut anyone last minute who didn't know what was going on. We're pretty solid in what's happening right up to the end. So
do you also have a reserve bench? Because that 100 is a good figure. You don't want to go necessarily above it, but you also have some great people you'd like to have as part of the chorus, but they serve as a backup situation. Somebody gets a sore throat, somebody breaks their ankle, they can't make it, whatever it is, they're not
well in the business. That's called an understudy. We don't really have understudies. Ideally that person with the sore throat last minute or twisted ankle at last minute is not a soloist. I would have to go into the list and find who the understudy is.
No, correct. I understand the understudy, but I was thinking more on the line of projecting ahead. When you have 100 people, there are people that come and go, move out of town, et cetera. So do you have a list of people in reserve that you can then audition again or re-audition? That's what
I understand what you're saying. Yeah. We have members who take leaves of absences and then say, you know, they're doing a lot of traveling this summer, so they can't commit to this cycle,
right,
but they want to be considered to come back in September. And of course if they've been out for too long, they have to re-audition, but if they've only been out for a cycle or two, we usually just welcome them back.
Great. Before I let you go, looking ahead for the next 5 years, and I exaggerated when I said Allegiant Stadium, but looking ahead, what do you see as the near-term future for the Las Vegas Men's Chorus?
Well, when I have such a supportive board and such a supportive a choir that's really kind of clicking on all cylinders, the possibilities are endless. The sky's the limit for us. We just not competed. We performed at a gala in Minneapolis in July, a giant festival of choruses from all over the world. That was a huge moment for us, our second time attending. I think a tour would be in the works, you know, maybe a bus tour, hitting some states, hitting some performances, taking our outreach outside of the valley is really important to me. Maybe continuing our run to, right now we're doing one show a cycle, maybe increasing that to 2 to 3. A lot of the choruses in the country that have even numbers larger than us have upwards of 200 to 300 members, do two or three shows per cycle. So just increasing any performance opportunity we can. We're always looking for community outreach opportunities. There's just lots of things that we're doing. All the things that we're doing are to increase our outreach so that we have the capacity to continue to just make safe spaces for people to continue to sing with us. The possibilities are endless. I really, I would love to do some joint work with maybe I know there's a chorus like ours in Reno. My brain goes to places like we could do some combined work with the choir in Phoenix. There's a choir in Palm Springs. There's multiple choirs in the Orange County, LA area, San Diego, even Tijuana and Mexico City. I mean, the possibilities are endless, really. I think that it's all about that identity crisis we talked about. And the more people that know us and the more people that know we're doing really, really good work, those opportunities are just going to continue to come our way.
Well, that's a great way to leave it. My guest has been Ryan Duff. He's the artistic director of the Las Vegas Men's Chorus. They'll be performing Broadway Our Way at UNLV's Artemis W. Hamm Concert Hall June 29th. At 4 p.m. And for ticket information, go to unlv.edu/pack. That's unlv.edu/pack. And of course, for everything about the chorus, go to lvmenschorus.org, lvmenschorus.org, and follow them on Facebook, Instagram, X, and YouTube. And Ryan, thanks for being on the show.
Ira, it was a pleasure. Anytime you want to talk about Las Vegas Men's Chorus, I could go on forever. So I'm happy to always speak about things I'm very passionate about. So I really appreciate the opportunity to be with you today. Thank you.
You got it. See you next time.
You've been listening to Talk About Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world.